From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy.
On this episode of Pennies Going In Raw, we discuss earnings reports, potentials and results, how to hedge yourself into earnings, and also SESN.
You find out life's this game of pennies.
Oh, you guys know we only have a 40% runner. Hello? 40% right is a f***ing killing.
We've been compliant for too long. It's time we go to war.
I don't have a Roth.
Q knows so much about the market that his brain doesn't have enough room for grammar.
Hey, who told me about IDEX? It's going up a shit ton now.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
You asked the exact same question with two words different.
It's like, f***, man, I just got dick whipped for like 20%, and now that f***er's up like 50.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
I'm just making this voice memo to call out unusual whales to a fight.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Pennies.
Going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity of Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny.
And Christian.
Let's go, baby.
Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. Today is Sunday, August the 15th, and overall, probably not a great week for FinTwit with Wish, as we'll get into later. But another thing that didn't turn out great for a lot of these small cap traders, I guess, is SESN, a biotech that, you know, after data came out, I believe it went from six to opening under a dollar, bounced to around two, but still a massive drop of around 80%.
Yeah, I mean, that's really insane. When there's a few that really stick out inside my mind as far as like, you know, really getting killed on data, Sava, S-A-V-A being one that like always sticks inside my mind. I think like from like 11 to two or maybe like $9 to $2. That's insane. I mean, this is definitely one where I think that like, people should remember ONTX is another, you know, and it just goes to show what happens when, you know, I mean, companies that are early stage, you know, who have promising potential, you know, I mean, what can truly happen if something doesn't go their way?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of look at these and we always used to talk about the risk of biotech. Was the risk reward there at $6?
I really don't think so. I haven't done like a full valuation of the company, but when I'm looking at something like this, I mean, this thing was up inside the past 6 months. This thing was up. It's gone from effectively $2 to $6. What that tells me is that there was a huge run up into this event, which, I mean, that's great because if you were, you know, let's just say that like you're a long-term believer inside the company, then, you know, I mean, you saw a rapid increase over the last 6 months. That being said, these early stage companies who have maybe one or two pipelines, I mean, the risk is huge. The risk is, I mean, there's just no other way to put it. The risk is huge. I mean, this trading was at three times where the cash level was. You know, that's probably fair value if let's just say that the pipeline just gets decimated. And I mean, that's pretty much what we saw. I mean, that's usually where they open up is near cash. So this one gave a great opportunity for scalpers. But that being said, I mean, you got obliterated if you were long.
Definitely a thing with the risk of biotechs and scaling out and how important everything is. But I mean, just the drop in that one from $6 to $1, I haven't seen anything quite like that. I mean, that was such a massive halt down. I remember watching it with some people, like waiting to see if we get an entry, and then seeing it at 86 cents. We're like, whoa.
Yeah.
It was so big.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, that's the thing is that because I know the next question we're going to get is something like, well, how do I identify if a biotech is good if I don't know anything about science? And, you know, because most people won't know anything about the science side of it, and that's okay. So there's a few things that you want to look at. You want to look at where they're trading at for cash, you know, like what dollar per share is in cash, and also, what kind of run-up has this thing seen from the perspective of, okay, if this drug fails, what else do they have to ride on? You know, if they have 20 drugs and one dies, you know, I mean, that's fine. But if there are if they only have two pipelines and that fails, you saw what happens. You're going to get smoked.
All right, well, another thing we saw this week was SPY, all-time highs, seeing around 445s. Are we expecting this to just continue until any lockdown notices come about?
Yeah, I really just, I don't even know, like, at this point, I think it's one of those. So, okay, the most dangerous thing for someone who's short, and I'm just strictly talking about the short, is what's the slow, gradual grind up, okay? Because there's no exhaustion, okay? There's no exhaustion, and there's also no parabolic move. And that's kind of what we're seeing out of SPY. Like if you're short SPY, there's no reason to add to your position because it's just been a slow gradual. And every time that it comes down to the 50-day moving average, I mean, it's bounced off of there. So that's the most dangerous game to play as a short, is just that slow, gradual grind, because it can just continue to go. The fundamentals catch up with it. When it does exhaust a little bit, fine, you get a 2% move down, and then you're right back to, you know, the slow grind. So for me, it's like, I really just think that we see 500 probably by February, because again, it comes back to what we always talk about. Fundamentally, you know, has there been a negative catalyst to change this train around? I mean, you sit there and you're like, no. You know, I mean, the day that interest rates rise, okay, then we can have that conversation. But right now, there's nothing changing.
All right. Well, I guess to kind of get into the talk of the town, Wish earnings reports came out, and there were loss of revenue, loss of users. Not exactly what was expected across the board. Obviously, we're going to need to go into it. But I think before we even go into earnings and, you know, what all that entailed, kind of going over hedging. I took some heat for hedging my position. I think one of the things I noticed with everyone saying like, oh, they all kept saying this and then they're taking it short. You guys keep using the term they. Like, all of us share the same account. That's not true. I didn't even.
I would love to do that, by the way.
Yeah, like. Yeah.
As long as Zach's in there and PJ.
Yeah, as long as he's the one controlling it. But I mean, the thing is, it's like, I didn't tell them about taking these puts. And I actually didn't even want to tell, like, Zach. I was like, damn, would this be fucked up to even mention? But I think the lesson on hedging is big in itself. Because if you have, let's say, 5,000 shares of Wish at $10. That's $50,000 in the position. Let's say earnings are bad, which they were, and it drops $2 or $3. You lose 15 grand because $5,000 each dollar, 5, 10, 15, because it goes down to 7, let's say.
Yeah.
If you just bought $2,000 worth of puts, which is around where I did 7, 50, 8, and 8, 50. And my risk was, yeah, if earnings are great and it shoots up a dollar, I lose $2,000 because the puts go worthless, but the stock goes up a dollar. My 5,000 shares are fine because I made $5,000 on it. However, if the stock drops, which it did, those puts go 500 to 1,000%. and you make the loss back. I mean, hedging your plays is, and looking at the risk reward in that, I think is a lot of the responses made it seem like not many people knew how to or knew about it at all.
Listen, it's a real big pet peeve of mine. If you get mad because someone made money on the short side and you weren't even short, but I'm just saying, if someone made money going against you, then you're just stupid. I mean, you just don't like, and I hate to say that because I just see these comments and it's like, dude, traders trade. Like, and this is something I never understood. Okay. If there's money to be made, trade it. Now, you know, I mean, there's some ethical things that I won't trade. Like, I remember, you know, there were some COVID plays, you know, last year that, you know, I wouldn't trade because of the business that they were in. And that's just my personal, but if you want to trade those things, I'm not going to get mad at you. It's the same thing. Like, you know, you can say what you want, but, you know, Warren Buffett made billions off of 9/11. You know, not obviously not directly, but by shorting the air stocks, by the airliner stocks. You know, listen, if there's money to be made, people are going to make it. You know, like you don't have to, but you can't get mad at them for doing that.
Yeah. And it's not like anyone taking those puts are the reason the stock tanked. Yeah. The stock did bad because of the earnings.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, in this market, what we were saying is even good earnings, you know, sometimes weren't making the stock go up.
No, that's exactly like, okay. So there's two things to add to that. One, underneath your post, I commented, I'm looking for a new co-host because this one, my current one, tanked Wish. And there was like two or three comments that were like, yeah, like taking it seriously. Like, damn it, Dan. Like, I can't believe you tanked Wish. You know, so it's like, listen, guys, Dan's puts aren't destroying Wish. I mean, you know, like anybody that's short is still not destroying Wish. The earnings report sucked. Like, that's what it came down to, which we'll get into in a minute. And then there's the flip side of it. And, you know, growth companies go through bumps in the road. Wait, do you want to go into the earnings report a little bit?
I think that's about all I really had for hedging is just the fact that when you kind of learn puts and, you know, even if you just took a very small amount of puts and you saw, you know, which ones to take and kind of just learn about taking some puts into earnings on your swings. I always do that. Sorry if I haven't been more vocal about that. But yeah, no, I think just taking puts into earnings on your swings is never a bad idea. Obviously, don't go too heavy in them, but mind your risk and, you know, never a bad idea.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
But I think going into the earnings report to explain, because, I mean, you see some people saying, oh, it has this market cap and they still made like $600 million or whatever. Sorry if that's wrong. But, you know, you also just said, you know, the earnings sucked. So, I mean, what is, you know, where's the light at the end of the tunnel for it?
Yeah. So there's a few things that we definitely have to talk about with this. It's one being that you have to understand that every company, no matter who they are, window dresses their earnings. I mean, that's what they do. And they also, so now that we're going to enter the Q4 pretty soon, and something to understand is that companies spend the last quarter of the year making the rest of the quarter look, making the rest of the year look better than what it was. Okay, that's just the reality of it. Okay, there's nothing illegal about it. It's just, hey, you know, maybe let's keep some cash. you know, maybe let's not pay like something like, you know, let's not pay our accounts receivable until the first of the next month, so that when we report last month's numbers, it looks like we have more cash, you know, like stuff like that. And that's okay. There's nothing illegal about it. It's just, let's call it creative accounting. Okay. So that's the first thing that everybody has to understand. Now, the other thing that you have to understand is that a lot of us trade speculative growth companies, okay? There's a reason that Apple doesn't move 10 to 15% because everything's already known. It's already expected, okay? Apple will never come out with a minus 50% revenue, okay? It's just, it won't ever happen, okay? I'll literally put my account on it that Apple will not do that from here on out. And that's because at this point, the brand loyalty that they've built up and the safeguards that they've built up, okay, they also have more cash than some countries, okay? So Apple's not a huge risk. So they're, you know, like that's what you have to understand, is that these growth companies, okay, there's bumps in the road, okay? Apple won't go up 10% and also won't go down 10%, well, maybe 10%, but Apple won't see huge price fluctuations for a reason in both directions. And if you're risk adverse, great. If you're trying to make some cash, you know, then you're not going to make it in Apple. That's just, you know, I mean, you could, but you know, you're not going to see these 20, 30% moves in Apple. I think that that's really important. Okay. No growth company doesn't see a bump in the road. Okay. What do you call it? Who is it? Mark Rudolph talked about Bezos' share letter to his first shareholder letter. Yeah. When he talked. Yeah. What do you say? You're much better at this.
Yeah, no, he mentioned to their first shareholders that, hey, if you're in this for money, you know, don't be in it. We're in this for the long term. But over time, you know, you will see, you know, good growth. Just we need you to be patient, basically. But, you know, if you're in it for quick money, this isn't the place.
Exactly. And so, listen, if you're expecting a big move on Wish, it's probably not going to come until the next quarter or two. It might, and that would be great. But we need to be realistic. And one of those things is that earnings report, it wasn't terrible in the sense of like, okay, the company's going to bankrupt. It's more terrible in the sense of like, they're expecting two bad quarters, like the next two quarters to be bad. And I mean, you know, you never want to see that. You know, that's like me telling you like, hey, like, you know, as a business partner, you know, like, hey, Dan, like, you know, we're not going to make dick for the next two quarters from PGIR. And this is our only, if this was our only income source, you know, like that's not what you want to hear as an investor, but that's just the reality of it.
And I know you kind of mentioned just now, you won't see the big move for a couple quarters. I know we, you know, a few weeks ago we said if it can get up to like 11, it'll see 15. Do like those technicals, does this earnings report kind of, you know, make
ruin
the
those?
Technicals a little, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So there was a pretty tight wedge going into earnings. I think TrendSpider had the best chart on that showing that. I mean, it was really tight. It was like a 3-month chart. I mean, this thing was setting up for a big move either way. It's just earnings report was the catalyst and ended up being a bad catalyst, which is part of the reason that we saw that is because the technicals, like the technicals were set up. It was going to make a big move. I think in hindsight, like when I was thinking about it, like we saw what happened to Amazon. So e-commerce has had two really great years now for the last 2 years. I mean, e-commerce across the board has had fantastic numbers the last two years. And then when we saw Amazon still beat and they got killed. Or if they didn't beat, they like barely missed, but whatever. But my point is that, and they got killed. So, I mean, in hindsight, like that should have been like, you know, maybe a red flag that should have gone off inside at least my, you know, my head, because you had puts and you were hedged saying like, hey, dude, like, you know, if the biggest e-commerce member got killed on a slight loss or, you know, I mean, a slight miss or even a slight win, you know, I mean, what's going to happen to all the others? And I mean, that's pretty much what we saw. And then on top of that, like I said, Wish gave, you know, kind of terrible guidance. So
what do you mean by terrible guidance?
Okay, so I'm going to read this. So quarter to date total revenue through July 2021 was down approximately 40% compared to the prior quarter. Okay, that's not good. That's not good. And the marketplace revenue was down approximately 55% compared to the same period. We expect third quarter revenue to decline further. Okay, so the skinny on that is that revenue was down a lot for the same period, and they expect third quarter to be the same, to decline further. So that's why we saw this huge overreaction, because not only did they say, hey, we've had bad revenue, but we also expect it to continue. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's not what we want to hear. But to everybody that says, like, yo, Hugh, like, what happened to, you know, like how do we work around this? We don't. Like, we don't. There's no way that we could have known this, okay? Like, I saw on Twitter someone like you should have known that. Like not much has sold out on Wish. That's stupid. That's the most ignorant comment in the world. There's no way that you could possibly have known this. But furthermore, this is where it could give a really good opportunity, because when they say things like that, long-term investors kind of think to themselves, well, okay, not long-term investors, but traders kind of think to themselves like, hey, I'm not holding this thing for two quarters to then reevaluate the business. The way that I look at it is that, hey, you know, they're coming close to, you know, pretty, I mean, their market cap is 4.7 billion. They still do over a billion in revenue a year. Okay. And their market cap's about 4 billion right now. So we're getting into zones where, you know, we could see a really good opportunity. You know, I mean, that if we're going to take like EBITDA and enterprise value and stuff, I mean, the second that they turn their revenue even back around to where it was, I mean, it probably should be trading at about that 13 level mark, maybe 14 or 15 level mark. Because, you know, when you think about when you're valuing a company, yes, it's a growth company. So when it does well, you know, it kills it. When it you know, doesn't do well, it gets killed. And that's just the way that growth companies work. But any kind of good news should really help this thing out because of where the market cap is. Now, again, everybody's expecting the next two quarters to be bad. So if this thing gets back to that 650 level and the market cap goes underneath that 4 billion mark, you know, now we're getting to where, like, hey, if they do another billion in revenue, then they're getting to almost the market cap inside revenue per year. You know, like, that's one of those times where it's like you say that out loud, okay? And, you know, like, I'm going to say that one more time. So if the stock goes down back to that $6, $6.50 level, the market and they're able to increase revenue, okay, that's the big if, then the market cap will basically be in line with the revenue per year. That's insane. You know, that would be like me doing, you know, me running like a laundromat, and let's just say the laundromat does $10,000 a year in revenue, and you coming to me and saying, hey, I'll buy your company for $10,000. That's what I think it's worth. And me saying, yeah, okay, that sounds like fair value. Like, no, obviously it doesn't, because in a few years, you know, like, let's just, depending on margins and stuff, in like a year or two, you would recoup your investment. And then the rest, you know, the rest of time would just be gravy. So, I mean, like, you know, I know I'm kind of going longer on that than I wanted to, but I want everyone to understand that, you know, we talk a lot about price to earnings ratio. So according to Ycharts.com, Wish's PE ratio is 3. Okay. Amazon's is 50. So that means that Amazon trades at a 57 price to earnings ratio and Wish trades at 3. And the S&P is trading, I think last time I looked, at like 15 to 18, something around there. So, I mean, if we're going to take like something like that, you know, if they can turn things around a little bit, if we're going to take, you know, the average S&P PE, you know, let's just say it's 15 and Wish's is 3, you know, I mean, then this thing could be trading at 35, or technically should be trading at around $35 a share. Now, again, it's a growth company. Okay. So there's a lot of bumps inside the road and stuff, but, you know, there's some significant opportunity here. Another one that comes to mind, another e-commerce, is Overstock.com. You know, we talk about this every once in a while, but that thing went from, I mean, that thing got killed last year, and it went all the way from 28 down to 250. And then from there, in literally 5 months, it went from 250 to $128 a share. So again, the great thing about growth companies is that they move a lot, okay? And if they start going, they can, like, really go. Like I said, $3 to $128. The bad part, okay, is that, you know, there's a lot of bumps in the road. And, you know, it can get killed. So this is why it's so important to be smart about how much position size you're taking, you know, your portfolio. So, I mean, if we're going to break down Wish, the bad, terrible earnings report, terrible, okay, terrible earnings report. The good, from a valuation standpoint, they're getting really close to where if they can improve numbers back to where they were, you know, and add revenue, then they're getting close to like a super cheap deal, you know, similar to like Overstock, where when Overstock was at $2 a share, you know, similar kind of valuation. So if they can improve, you know, get back to where they were, improve a little bit, there's some really great opportunity, but it's all about being smart and understanding that this is a more longer term play because you're not, if you're holding, you're probably not holding for some kind of like catalyst, like some kind of announcement. You know, you're holding for a fundamental change inside the company. I think that's the good, the bad, the skinny. So it offers really good opportunity. There's obviously a lot of risk, but if you manage it right, and they do improve fundamentally, you know, this could be a really good winner.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Yeah. And I, you know, all these people that, you know, are super worried, I think that goes back to the position sizing. I had around 10% of my account in it. And, you know, even if I didn't hedge myself, it having a 25% drop is only 2.5% of my account. Yeah. Pretty big red day, but nothing that's going to make me like blast off on Twitter. So, you know,
I'm looking at it right now because I wanted to see. I'm down 32% in it. I mean, I used to be like that kind of like, you know, trying to throw 40% of my account at something. And that's just not like, that's not how I trade anymore. And that's, I learned by getting killed. I think one of the last straws for me was ONTX. You know, like I think that was like, okay, you know, now I really need to learn risk management. And since then, you know, my account doesn't go up 200-300%. But it also doesn't get cut in half. And so, you know, I mean, it took me to learn the hard way. And if you're learning the hard way, you have to understand that, hey, whatever your account is at now, thank God you didn't learn the hard way when it's five times what it is. Okay. And this is why it comes back down to like, you know, that beer money saying that we talk about is that, hey, learn the hard way with $200 instead of 20 grand. Or 2,000, or you know, try and really create a systematic strategy so that, you know, even if you don't learn the hard way, get a lot of wins underneath your belt to where like you have a really high winning percentage and a really good, you know, a trial period, a really long trial period, and then you can scale up.
Yeah, and you know, another thing with it, I think kind of going back to the hedging side, it's still like I've been pretty vocal about trading around the Wish position as well. You know, obviously some days it's harder than others, but I mean the past week or two before earnings, it definitely gave those 50 cent moves every day kind of up and down where you were able to give yourself a, you know, a little fluffer position. So I mean, you know, going into these, yeah, I think the drop was really big in comparison to the earnings, even though the earnings was bad. But this is one of the things that happens when there are heavily influenced retail trades. When retail traders are flooding the stock, you got to expect that a lot of them are new. And whenever they see crazy red, they're going to just sell it. And you're going to get either A, better buying opportunities, or B, your puts are going to be worth a lot if you do decide to hedge that way.
Yeah, and this was really the trifecta. I mean, the chart was setting up for a big move. Obviously, a negative catalyst came out. The earnings reports not only were bad, but they also gave bad guidance for you know, the next two quarters, or you know, at least the next quarter. And then on top of that, we're inside August and the volume's super low. I mean, besides, I mean, yesterday, Wish trade, I mean, Friday and Thursday, Wish trade a lot of shares. But I mean, other than that, it really hasn't traded. I mean, on a weekly basis, when it was near 14, it had traded over 1 billion shares in the week. Even this week, with all that volume, it still only traded 393 million. So only a third. Like, isn't that insane to think about? And I mean, the week before that, it had traded a tenth, like literally a 10% of the amount of shares that it traded on that week at the end of June.
Yeah.
So low volume, chart set up for a big move, terrible earnings report, and, you know, it's the trifecta.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, going into these, that's kind of what you got to expect. And hedging yourself during swings, I think, is a lesson hopefully everyone will, you know, benefit from. And the thing that I was kind of most scared of was earnings just being decent or something. It's staying around and then it stays around $9. The stock basically drops like 50 cents. All my puts are worthless and the stock's down too. And then, you know, that's one of the downsides of it, where, you know, you're down on both of them. So, I mean, there are downsides where it can drop just as you expected, just not as much. And then you're just down in your puts and your commons. So risk to it as well. Just mind that, you know, going along. Oh, but I do think, you know, one thing that everyone wants to know, I'm still like 99% sure Zach is holding his full position. So if anyone's just following that one along, you know, don't be worried. All right, so let's say you do know there's news, whether it be like, or I guess earnings reports are going to be one of the only times you really know there's news, or if there's like a conference coming, and you see the stock kind of tanking, is there a point where you're still comfortable and you still have conviction on the swing, but you think you'll be able to get it at a lower price where you sell? Like, let's say after hours, like on Wish, like you notice it was going down, you saw it break 9, you sell, and you were able to get like 7 later that afternoon, 7:30, and then the next morning around 6:80 or whatever, you know. Or let's say UAVS from like a year ago, you know, we're going into a conference, everyone thinks they're going to announce Amazon, it goes up to 5, and then it drops down to like 2. At what point are you able to kind of, if ever, sell and, you know, kind of find the not bottom? I guess find the cliff, you know, get off on the middle of the cliff.
I mean, it happened to me last year. I mean, I had saw an offering that had come out and I had dumped my position like immediately. I was swinging it for like, I was like day trading it or something. I was going to overnight it, and I had seen that an offering came out and I dumped a position. The offering ended up being like 5 million or something. The stock went down like 3%. And it was like, hey, you know, like they basically said like, hey, we're raising this 5 million because we just got a massive purchase order. And I hadn't read that part. You know, I just seen an offering and I was like, fuck it. I'm getting out. I'm not overnighting this. And then, you know, it was getting passed around that they had a purchase order that, you know, obviously wasn't announced yet. And that's why they had raised 5 million. Thing ended up like 20% overnight or something. So I mean, like, yeah, there's definitely times like that where, you know, you might think that you can get it lower. And that's why I really don't like to sell all my position at once. Scaling in and out is huge for me, just because I don't ever want to act like I know exactly what's going to happen. And there's so many times where, you know, you think that you can get it lower, or hell, you think that you can sell higher. And I mean, it ends up just doing the exact opposite.
Yeah, because I mean, like, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are like, damn, I saw it cross 9. I thought it could have sold and bought lower. But at the same time, it's, you know, 9 also probably looked like a good buying point.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, the end of the week for a lot of people didn't end up going great. I know you're a big swinger. How was your kind of end of the week?
Terrible. Literally terrible. This will probably be my biggest red month in a pretty long time. And I'm not, it'll definitely be my biggest red month monetarily. But from a percentage point of view on the account, I mean, I haven't had a percentage drawdown like this in a long time. And it's just one of those times where it's like, you know, I mean, this is one of those times where, you know, you can dig yourself a 30% hole really easy. Like, let's just say you're down 5 or 10% or even fuck it. Say you're down 20% on your account inside the past two weeks, 3 weeks. This is those time that you need to scale down, take 10 shares max, something that's not going to even affect your account by 1%, because the only thing worse than losing 20% of your account is losing 40% of your account. And it's really easy to do, especially in a market like this. I mean, we've talked about August, how much we hate August for months. Even last year, we talked about August and it ended up being a good August. But I mean, this is truly summer trading. And so if you're a newer trader and you've never traded inside this, I mean, hello, you know, like welcome to August. You know, I mean, even for me, you know, like I got killed. I'm getting killed. And so what I've decided to do is like, you know, I decided that I'm going to use like 20% of my account until I go away to Egypt and I go to Reno. And then when I come back, you know, maybe the market picks up and I'll reevaluate. But honestly, I've been burnt out anyway. So I'm ready for a little bit of away time.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's weird. Like the first week of August, you know, it wasn't bad if you kind of knew how to play your large caps, but it has kind of started to feel like a regular August in the past week. There are days, obviously, it doesn't, but, you know, and if you just look on Twitter, it seems like, oh, there's gains everywhere. But I mean, if you're having a tough month, trust me, it's not just you. This and like no one, not everyone's having this fantastic August.
No. And I mean, there's some people killing it, like always, but you need to stay inside your lane. That's why last week when we were talking about shorting, I was like, dude, I really think it's bad that people want to now learn shorting. And it's just because I mean, I see this every year. It's, hey, I'm not making money from the long side. You know, the obvious answer is let me just go short. And that's again, a dangerous game. It's revenge trading, oversizing, and then not staying in your lane. That is going to kill your account. I mean, it's happened to me. You know, it's funny because last week I was at a family reunion and one of my aunts was like, one of my aunts said, you know, like, it's great that, you know, you've seen all this success out of nowhere. I was like, Aunt Patty, like, I'm on year 8.5. Like, like, I've gotten killed. I got killed for like 4 years. This is a marathon. This isn't a sprint. And I mean, it took me literally 4 years of trading in August and wiping out half of the gains to then like click on and be like, oh shit, like I shouldn't be over trading. Like I should size down. And I mean, like in the moment, it just didn't, I was like, oh fuck. Like if I can just make like half of it back, you know, like I'd be stoked, you know, but that's just how you dig yourself deeper. Or I'd see someone, you know, make like $2,000 that day. I'd be like, damn, like, you know, I'm at $1,800. Like, let me push it. And I end up losing the day. Or like even Friday, I was short Moderna. I made a good win on it and I should have walked away from the desk. Did I? No. I tried to go short on it again. It swiped back up against me. What I do, I covered at the very top of the day and ended up going, you know, down another 7-8 points. And so instead of taking the first win, okay, I ended up, you know, going back to even and then losing overall in the trade. And then my thesis ended up being right. And so it's just one of those times where like during August, I just can't win and that's fine. But like now I understand that.
We always joke about like taking all of August off, but by the end of August, a lot of times you will dead ass think, shit, I should have taken the whole month off solely because you see your account or whatever, you know, happened to it. And no, I mean, and it's another thing where the slower markets are the worst ones to revenge trade in. You're going to get burnt way worse. So, you know, just managing that is going to be your biggest thing. But we do have some events coming up. Christian should have our merch drop coming soon. Hugh is going to Egypt and I am moving. But we do have our episodes planned out for then. We're going to have Doug Bonaparte, like PJ, Gary and Tommy together on an episode. And we got to get one more. I think it's going to be four episodes we're gone for. So we'll make sure to have you guys episodes every time. And we also have details coming out, or actually on Twitter right now, for our Reno event coming up on the 7th and 8th.
Yeah. So we just booked the venue for Reno for that Tuesday night. That Tuesday night's going to be more of a discussion from, like, you know, your favorite furus and gurus and shmurus. And then we're going to do like drinks and stuff after. We're going to do drinks there too. Obviously, I mean, we're not, you know,
we're going to drink everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. I think Reno's open container for those 2 days. And then you know, we're staying inside a casino, so I don't know what personally can go wrong. We're staying in a casino, so go wrong? We're inside the fourth largest city in Nevada. All the boys are going to be together. We're staying in a casino.
City in Nevada, that is not a flex.
Dude, everything's cheaper. Like the venue that I got quoted for, the same thing that I got quoted for in Atlantic City, this was a quarter of the cost for the night. With booze.
I've seen, like, there's this app called Hopper. I'll see that, like, gets you cheap hotel costs, and their advertisement is like $33 hotel, and it's in Reno. So, and then all the comments are, how would I go to Reno?
Yeah, well, I mean, to listen. Well, now you what have could a go reason. Wrong? We're gonna be there's a college nearby that we're gonna be at, you know, giving seminars. We're staying in a casino, and all the boys will be together. What could possibly go wrong?
We were staying in a casino. That does make that makes me a lot happier.
Silver Legacy. It's going to be fun. It's funny because when I called about the venue, they were like, is there something going on that week? Like, we're going to raise our prices because like we've just seen like this influx of people like on this random week, and I'm like. I got like a big, you know, big head for a moment, and I was like, oh shit, like I wonder if like something else is actually going on, because that would ruin this big head moment of mine.
Yeah, well, it should be a fun time, and we'll see everyone there. A little short episode this week, but you know, we'll get him back next week, Tiger. So see you guys, and we love you. Bye.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.